Davison Opto here with Matt Ford, who appears to still be decompressing after an eventful Ruhr Derby over the weekend. It was a game that lived up to its height once again. We'll get to that. We'll get to also Hertha's win over Frankfurt, giving the Eagles two losses on the bounce. And Bayern Munich picked up their first home win since the middle of September. But with the eventful Derby over the weekend, there's no other place to start but Gelsenkirchen. So Matt Ford had the privilege of once again going to the opening Ruhr Derby of the season, just as he did last season. He caught up with some Schalke fans before the game, and after the game, he caught up with an old friend of ours, Archie Reintut, a sideline reporter for Fox Sports in the United States. Take a listen.
It's a special day in Gelsenkirchen. It's Derby Day, Schalke 04 against Borussia Dortmund. It's about 2.5 hours to kick off, and we are on a pub on the famous Schalke Meile, which you ever come to Gelsenkirchen. It's the main street leading up to the ground, a very historical area of Gelsenkirchen with some important areas for Schalke. The old stadium, the old Kampfbahn is here. The old Parkstadion is obviously nearby, and the new Veltins Arena is also here. So yeah, we're in a pub on the Schalke Meile, and with Florian, Schalke fan, who's agreed to talk to us. Florian, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from, and how long have you been watching Schalke?
Okay, hey my friend, my name is Florian. I am not from Gelsenkirchen, but I am from Krefeld. It's not far away. And I got a fan of Schalke 04 when I was, I think, 6. At Christmas, my big wish was to have a tricot of this club. And my parents gave me that, yeah. And this was the first time I get in a relationship to this club. And since then, I am a big fan of this club.
And do you have a season ticket? Do you go to all the games?
I don't have a season ticket because it's really, really, really difficult to get one of them. But each year I go to the Jahresversammlung, it means in Deutsch.
The AGM.
Yeah. The fans can give feedback to the club.
You're a member.
Yeah. And when you go to them, you have the opportunity to get tickets. And this is what I do. And so I will become tickets. So I will become tickets
for each game.
Yeah. When I am early, yeah, in the internet. Yeah.
Good stuff. So obviously, let's talk about the football a little bit. Last season was a really, really good season for Schalke. In Domenico Tedesco's first year, he came second, which is the best finish in years, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good finish. Nobody supposed that we get second in the championship. But we do this not about good football, we do this about mentality.
Mentality.
And that's the reason why Schalke is such a great club, yeah? Because everything comes about the heart, about the mentality. It's based on the history of this country.
Very emotional club, definitely. Yeah, I think you can see that if ever you come to a game in Schalke, you can see in the city. Gelsenkirchen is not a very big city, but everywhere you look are blue and white flags and Schalke fans as far as you can see. Last season, I think you finished 8 or 9 points ahead of Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah. But
this season, I think you're 19 points behind already. So what's changed? What's the problem for Schalke this year? It's not been a good start.
The problem is the start in the championship. Yeah, that's the only problem. Yeah, we lost some points and we are, like you said, I think 90 pounds, is it right?
19 points.
19 pounds, okay. It doesn't matter because today is Derby. Derby makes its own histories.
So you're not concerned about Domenico Tedesco? You're not concerned about the squad?
I think Domenico Tedesco is a young trainer, but he's also a good trainer. He speaks a lot with the players. And got some tactical finesse, yeah. You can say he's like Pep Guardiola, maybe, yeah. Yeah. He's also very emotional to the game, to the players, and maybe a good mix between Pep Guardiola and Jürgen Klopp.
Okay.
Jürgen Klopp was also trainer by Borussia Dortmund, and he got this special thing to push the players. Yeah.
Do you think maybe sometimes his tactics are a little bit too defensive, a little bit too conservative?
You can say that the game forward is not good.
Yeah.
There's a much place to get better, but we hope in him and we think that would be great.
That's been one of the big problems for Schalke this season, scoring goals. I think is it only 13 or 14 goals in total?
And five in the last game.
And five in the last game, so yeah, against Nuremberg. At Borussia Dortmund, that's the opposite. They've made some really, really good signings, like Paco Alcácer, who's been really, really good. Jadon Sancho has been good for them this year. Schalke have made some signings who maybe have not been as successful.
Yeah.
Do you think the transfers have been good for Schalke?
The transfers? Yeah. It's difficult to say because the transfers we did in summer doesn't work. Yeah. But in the last years, it was the same problem. The transfers we did doesn't work in the same year we transfer them, but in the next year, because they have to.
They have to get the right attitude.
Get
used to playing.
Like our game have to work. Yeah.
Let's focus on today a little bit. Borussia Dortmund. The last time you played Dortmund, or last season, two good results, 2-0 at home, and that incredible 4-4 draw away.
I was there and it was incredible. Yeah. Today at
you
the
were
morning.
There. Explain how you felt on that
As a stand up today, I watched this video of this game and I have to cry. Yeah. Had to cry. Because
so you were there last time.
Yeah,
so
I was there.
What, you were in the Westfalenstadion?
Yeah.
What did you think after 25 minutes?
It was a special story because I hadn't had the card and I went to the main station here in Gelsenkirchen with the paper who stand on, I need a ticket.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody believed in me. Everybody laughing at me, and then there was a guy who gave me a ticket. I went with him to the stadium. At the halftime pass, I thought, this was the best decision I ever did in my life. €4, but then the last 45 minutes was incredible. Really, really, really. I will remember at the end of my life. Nice.
So that's okay. Let's talk about a bit about Borussia Dortmund then. What do you, if I say to you as a Schalke fan, BVB, what do you think? What do you think of them?
I have no relationship with Borussia Dortmund. I never was in Dortmund. Only when I went to the stadium, Borussia Dortmund is a city for me who doesn't exist. Nobody needs this. And yeah, I also know some Dortmunders. Yeah, it's a normal relationship to them, but when football is the main theme, yeah, we are different.
What is the difference between a Schalke fan and a Dortmund fan?
Different. I think there's no much difference, but everybody celebrate their own club, and we don't want to stay with each other.
It's very shaky. There's only 30 kilometers.
Yeah.
Between the two cities, yeah. They're two quite old.
They have the same history, the mentality is maybe also the same, the people are the same because they live maybe right next door. But Dortmund is Dortmund in a zone which is close for us.
So what do you think about today? Are you expecting Schalke to win?
Yeah, I think we had many chances to win this game. It will be difficult because Dortmund has really, really good players in the forward. But if we stay with a good structure, we will create our chances and we can win this game for sure.
Okay.
It's derby.
Okay, thanks for your time, Florian. Just going to try and get some of your friends to talk on the podcast as well. What's your name? Where do you come from?
My name is Jackie. I'm from Essen too.
From
Essen.
From Essen.
Yeah, neighbor city.
Also nearby.
Yeah.
And how long have you been a Schalke fan?
Oh, I'm just his girlfriend. So it's like I need to like Schalke, love Schalke. Well,
so you have no choice.
I don't have a choice. But it's my second time in the stadion, and I'm really excited for today, for the game today.
What's your experience so far? So we're in the pub, everyone's having a good drink and some food.
Yeah, we've been... for today, you mean? Yeah, for today, we just have a few drinks, few beers, and...
How many is a few?
For me, just one. For him, I think the fifth, or I don't know, five, six beers today.
Okay.
So, it'll be a good day.
Okay, let's see how it goes. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
full time in Gelsenkirchen, where the 174th Riviera Derby between Schalke 04 and Borussia Dortmund finished 2-1 to the black and yellow side of town. We're on the motorway, heading back. Got a very special guest driving me home. Archie, journalist over here in Germany. Initial thoughts after that 2-1. It wasn't spectacular, was it?
No, I thought that the problem is actually that you had probably the best derby game ever last season, and particularly playing this game just a year after that, it's always going to kind of lie in the shadow of it somewhat. That said, I think that given the way that last year's derby games between Schalke and Dortmund very much symbolised the season that both teams were having, I thought that this year it did a pretty similar job, in as much as that Schalke struggling to create anything, again a fortuitous penalty from my eyes. I think that had Schalke drawn this today, Dortmund would have been furious at the decision being overturned. A clear and obvious error, I don't think it fell into that category. But Dortmund very comfortable in terms of defending against them, as they've been against pretty much most teams this season. And do they create a lot of chances? No. But do they take their chances almost every time? Yes. And the strongest dribbler in the division, in my eyes, Jadon Sancho, comes up trumps again. He can look like he's not having a good game for long periods. I say he can look like he doesn't have a good game for sometimes for long periods, but he comes up with the goods.
I think Schalke's problems up front are well known. I think that now makes it this season 15 goals from 14 Bundesliga games. So their problems up front are well known. Guido Burgstaller was the only recognised striker, apart from Cedric Teuchert on the bench, who started saying it, but even he came off in the first half. I think Schalke finished the first half with a front three, or I made it anyway, of Hamza Mendel on the left, Nabil Bentaleb sort of pushing into a striking role, and Weston McKennie. I think that pretty much sums up Schalke's offensive problems. But yeah, I think you're right to point out Jadon Sancho obviously scored the winner. But I thought he stood out mainly for me in the first 20-25 minutes, where Dortmund had their best period. I thought Marco Reus dominated midfield in those opening periods, and Sancho looked like a bag of creativity, full of confidence, running at Bastian Oschipka time and time again. The poor lad's going to be having nightmares, isn't he?
I thought Oschipka at times actually coped with him well. It took him a little while in the first half to get to grips with him, but actually Sancho's goal comes from him being switched onto the left hand side in the second half. It comes from him being on the opposite flank. Maybe that was the secret to it, because Nastasic didn't know what to do in that situation. Such is the way that Sancho closes his body so well. I think defenders find it very difficult to know which way he's going, much like the car that's just gone past on the left. Oh, we thought we were going to die. We didn't. Anyway, I thought
could be live motorway drama here, couldn't it?
Anyway,
at least if it all goes wrong, we've got evidence of what happened.
Yeah, quite. I think the interesting thing for me is how Sancho has powered past Christian Pulisic in the pecking order at Dortmund, and they're different players in terms of their dribbling style. I was talking to one Dortmund journalist before the game, and he actually went as far as saying that Pulisic is a one-trick pony. Defenders know what he's going to do. It's going to be knock the ball past them and then try and sprint past them. But with Sancho, as you can see, I mean, the way he's able to keep the ball and just hold on to it, the defenders just don't know what he's doing, such as the way that he moves his body. I would almost compare the way that they dribble with the ball. I would say that Sancho dribbles with it in a very kind of FIFA way, if we take this down to gaming terms, whereas
this is what modern football journalism has come down to in 2018.
I see Pulisic as more of a pro Evo kind of dribble. It's a lot more square, the way that he tries and runs. It's square and diagonals. He's not quite as nimble and as agile, I would say, as
Schalke, on the other hand, are more like Sabutio.
Yeah, I think Sabutio is a very good phrase, because all they can really do is knock it. Yeah. There's no real control to the game, and you look at someone like Sebastian Rudi, one of the great, I mean this is a direct translation from Spielgestalter, but game designers, the way that he's able to get hold of a game we've seen at Hoffenheim in previous years, but he just looks a little bit lost in this system. And while Schalke had control midfield,
he seemed miles behind Marco Reus this afternoon, especially in those opening stages when Reus was pulling all the strings. Sebastian Rudy was literally chasing shadows in midfield.
Just looks very uncomfortable, and you think if you buy a player of Sebastian Rudy's quality, then you want to use him to his fullest qualities. But Domenico Tedesco hasn't set the side up that way. The way that they started trying to play the season, trying to play a little bit more openly, a signing like Rudy makes sense. But now, if the ball is just being hit long all the time, and you have no strikers, it would have probably made more sense to me if they brought on Naldo up front rather than Hamza Mendil, because you could have at least seen that Naldo's got a chance of winning more headers against Manuel Akanji.
But we were saying that we felt a bit sorry for Weston McKennie, didn't we? Forced into that role up front and almost being tasked with winning balls and bringing them down, up against Akanji and Diallo. Backing a loser from the start, wasn't he?
Yeah. I spoke to McKennie after the game and he described Manuel Akanji as being a tank. So I thought that put it well.
But that sums it up quite well, yeah.
Just to finish on Rudy, he's had fitness problems as well. But the biggest difference between Schalke and Borussia Dortmund this season is that almost every single one of Borussia Dortmund's transfers has landed. And almost every single one of Schalke's transfers has not worked at all. And Schalke have not given out a small amount of money either for players like Salif Sané, Sebastian Rudy as well.
Although Sané has probably been the one Schalke transfer which has actually come off quite well.
You think?
Yeah, comparatively anyway.
I've not been convinced with him so far. I just think with Schalke as well, it's the small details that are missing. Daniel Caligiuri doesn't look anywhere near the player he was on the right-hand flank. All of their goals this season are pretty much coming from set pieces. That they don't look dangerous at all from open play.
Or against Nuremberg.
No, yeah, or against Nuremberg and Hannover. I mean, they scored 8 goals in those games and then 7 in the rest.
Let's look at the bigger picture a little bit there. We've just heard Alessandro Schöpf on the radio here coming back, haven't we? He's actually mentioned the word relegation battle now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit too soon to be talking about that, but it does put into some sort of relief the situation that Schalke do find themselves in. That they're now 22 points behind a Dortmund team which they finished 9 points clear of last season, I think, or 8. You mentioned the transfers that haven't come off for Schalke, but
it's not just them,
given though. Given the quality or perhaps lack of quality they've been targeting, it's not even comparable to the sort of quality that Dortmund have brought in.
No, not at all. And you think that the hand that Christian Heidel had to work with here as well, with the club playing Champions League football again, I think you're playing under a great young coach as well. The vision and the chance that he had to sell them was, I think, to players coming to the club was a very good one. And you would say that, to be honest, Heidel's best signings have not really been the ones where he's spent a lot of money. Every time that he's spent big money so far with Schalke, like on Braylon Bolo, who is out with a broken foot right now again. But it's not really come off. And I think that he's got to be under a little bit of scrutiny for that, because the big signings have not really worked for Schalke. And you would expect better. Okay, a second place finish in a division last season that was very much Gegendinball, as they say here. Almost teams are not looking to try and dominate their opponents. They're looking to just play against the ball, as they say over here. But you would still think that you can be a little bit more creative, but you just wonder the wisdom of changing tact as they did so early on in the season. But results force their hands, but they don't.
I wonder if Tedesco,
they don't look a very good unit at all.
I wonder if Tedesco's decision to move away from what he's traditionally more known for, his more defensive, results-based, results-orientated style of play, and move away from that towards a more, or at least try and play a more expressive and attacking style. I wonder if that was influenced slightly by the whole emotional situation around Gelsenkirchen, around Schalke. That's the sort of football the fans demand to see. I wonder if he's letting himself be dictated by that a bit too much, and perhaps it came a little bit too soon for him and the team he's building.
I don't know if they do demand that over here. They demand results above everything else, and the fact that Schalke were second at the end of last season and with one of the most spectacular derby results in their history. That meant more to Schalke fans. They will remember that. They won't necessarily remember some of the football, but I think that first and foremost, so goes the cliche, the results come first.
Where do you see Schalke finishing this season then?
Ninth.
So that's mid-table. I'm going to push the boat out and say 10th. So yeah,
that was
come back to that at the end of the season. Yeah, cheers for your time, Archie. Got time for one pint when we get back to Clone, haven't we? I think.
Yeah, but a pint. I mean, you don't get pints in Cologne, Matt. You and I know that. Should mention as well, just very quickly, whilst it's running through my head, and before we've got to turn off towards Cologne. I think there's some, perhaps a little bit of a question mark about the division's top scorer right now. I say that we're driving back whilst it head to Frankfurt's on, so Luka Jovic could probably score again. But Paco Alcácer, because Didi Haumann raised something the other week about, okay, Alcácer is proving it off the bench, but it's going to be something completely different to try and make an impact from the very start. We've seen him a couple of times now from the very start. Look, he had 2 years at Barcelona where he barely played at all, and I think Lucien Favre has been trying to emphasise that. But I would just maybe put something behind that question mark as well. Borussia Dortmund don't create a lot of chances, no. But I think that there is a point to prove from Alcácer to show that he is a player who can do it from the very start as well. I think Didi Haumann's got a point there, but...
Yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah, it should be pointed out. He was quite disappointing today, Alcácer. Was it only his second or perhaps third Bundesliga start today?
You can count them on one hand.
Yeah, it's just like a surprise starting ahead of Mario Götze. Given how stubbornly and how efficiently Schalke were set up at the back, at least at the start, I thought perhaps they were almost lacking a little bit of the guile or creativity that Götze could have brought. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, I think yeah, Haman's right in saying that there's definitely room for improvement as far as Alcácer is concerned. His only real involvement, which I can remember, was a shot that he curled wide at one point in the first half. Yep. But apart from that, it did seem like he wasn't... Those automatic movements and link-ups with his teammates weren't quite there, at least not from the start. Favre will be aware of that. Favre knows that, like you said, he's come off a difficult spell at Barcelona, and there's still a long season to go for Dortmund and Schalke. Finally, the Dortmund fans at the end of the game there were chanting, "Who's going to be German champions? Borussia BVB." It's too early for that.
No, not at all. If you can't enjoy these sort of times now after Bayern have won the last six Bundesliga titles, then when can you? And particularly, the way that Borussia Dortmund are winning right now, that wasn't their best performance of the season, but they win and they do so without really being threatened for long periods as well. I think that the way it's going right now, I think that Bayern are going to come at them again, but I still see Borussia Dortmund winning this Bundesliga title this season. I think that 14 games unbeaten now.
Yeah,
I think that there is an assuredness to them at the back which I can't remember seeing even at the best of times. And I think that that's actually going to probably make the difference in the end, because that's what Borussia Dortmund have lacked. Even under Jurgen Klopp, I can't remember their defence being this good.
Certainly gone under the radar a bit, given all the attacking potential and attacking potency they've had on display this season. But yeah, cheers for that, Archie. And we're off to the pub.
That was Matt Ford in Gelsenkirchen, and now he's on the couch with me here. You covered most of the things about the game that we probably would have talked about, so I want to instead focus, Matt, on the some of the fan stuff that has come out from that game. A really nice fan choreo from the Nordkurve, one of the best curvas, by the way, in the Bundesliga. But they did let themselves down with this controversial banner. So why didn't you explain what it was and basically the background behind it?
Like you said, really really impressive choreo to start off with from the Ultras Gelsenkirchen, and that coming on the back of that incredible like friendship display they did the week before against Nürnberg. And we'll come back to it later, but I think the banner you mentioned was a banner held up by a slightly different a different ultra group within Schalke support, so not the regular like Ultras Gelsenkirchen, which were responsible for the big display, but a separate group called the Hugos. And if anybody's seen it on social media, the banner basically said, well, first of all, Tod in BVB, so death to BVB, which is nothing particularly unusual. People do say that, and vice versa. But the other part said freedom for freedom for Sergei V, or Sergei W, who is, of course, the man who was recently convicted of 28 counts of attempted murder.
Yeah, he's basically the Dortmund bus bomber.
Effectively, yeah, but as the difference is, he has now been convicted.
Right, exactly.
Sentenced to 14 years in jail for various convictions. And, obviously an extremely serious message to put on a banner, and distasteful in the extreme, I think. This is literally legally convicted of 28 counts of attempted murder. It's not really a laughing matter, so I think, with all the rivalry that goes on between Dortmund and Schalke, the rest of the day went off absolutely peacefully, absolutely no trouble at all, from at least not what I saw. I've heard nothing else. But yeah, that was a little bit too far below the belt and a bit distasteful, I thought.
Yeah, you mentioned too that on social media that Schalke fans have asked for this group of fans to be banned from the stadium. You're making a face. Why do you say that?
Making a face. I think, it's not going to happen. They're not going to be banned. It's difficult to identify who they are. We know what group it's coming from, but there's no way of identifying exactly where it's come from. I also wouldn't go as far to say that a banner, no matter how distasteful or idiotic, merits a stadium ban. It's not that either.
Really? You really don't think that?
No,
something...
I don't. I think it's pathetic. I think it's distasteful. I think it's idiotic.
But
I think there's much more. I still think there's much more serious offences which can be committed than a distasteful and unnecessary banner.
Yeah, true. I just think that I've obviously, being an American, I mean, our country was founded on a principle of freedom of speech. At the same time, that borderlines on hate speech. In some circles, it could be hate speech. Because essentially referring, especially since with the reference to a convicted attempt, someone who tried to harm, literally harm the team that they're playing. So
yeah, I take your point, and I think I can certainly see why it might be interpreted like that in some circles. I also think that as I said, as distasteful and unnecessary as it was. Is still a derby, and it wouldn't be a lot different, in fact, had the situation with Dortmund become even worse and had there been fatalities. Luckily, as we know, thank God, there weren't, which makes this banner, distasteful in the extreme, but I think we can leave it at that. One interesting thing to mention anyway regarding Schalke was the big display, as I mentioned. They actually used safe pyrotechnics.
Yeah, define what that is, because I did see I did see recently that some fan groups are also not just in Germany but in general are experimenting with cold pyrotechnics rather than obviously the flare pyrotechnics.
Yeah, this comes from Denmark. I think the Brøndby fans have been developing it in Denmark. Flares which are cold enough to actually put your hand through, so they're definitely not dangerous. What the Schalke fans were using weren't flares; they were smoke bombs. But the stadium announcer announced to everyone else in the stadium during the display, "Look, nobody be concerned, don't be worried. The smoke that's being used has been tested, and I think in my understanding, it's water based. Although my scientific knowledge of it doesn't extend that far, but I believe it's liquid based smoke, which." Had a different effect and also wasn't dangerous, but certainly one to look out for in future.
All right, so the Ruhr Derby was clearly the big game of the weekend, but it wasn't the only big game. And in fact, the game that the Bundesliga showcased on Saturday evening was the Hertha Berlin-Frankfurt game. And that, although it looked somewhat bland to the naked eye, actually, I personally found that game rather interesting with the way that that Hertha was able to prevent this Frankfurt trio from scoring. I'm sure we're going to argue about the penalty call or the non-call near the end of the game. But it was, it was a win that Hertha Berlin certainly needed after a very tough stretch between in the end of October and November. And it's the second win, or second loss, excuse me, handed to Eintracht Frankfurt. So what did you think of the contest?
I'd agree with you initially saying that it was a bit of an eyebrow raiser to see that as the big featured game on Saturday, especially given that we had Schalke Dortmund and even Bayern Nuremberg, given the fact that Bayern's current mini crisis slash a bit of a derby as well. So yeah, maybe quite surprising to see that game put up there. However, then again, on the other hand, we've been watching the Bundesliga all season, and Hertha and Frankfurt are easily the two biggest surprise teams of the year. I think that's fair to say.
I think Hertha was a surprise at the beginning of the year, and then kind of regressed to the mean sooner than maybe some hoped they would, considering they weren't European competition. But yeah, they at the beginning of the season, they definitely were both surprises.
Yeah, and I think both are in slightly different stages of a mini crisis too. Obviously, you pointed out that's now two defeats in two for Eintracht Frankfurt after the 2-1 defeat to Wolfsburg last week. But for Hertha, they've come off a little mini crisis of their own. I think, was it six games without a win? Although, albeit four of them were draws, and
right.
one of them was the
Yes, yeah, it's just that they weren't winning.
Yeah, they weren't winning.
Yeah, and considering that they were near the top of the table, I believe at one point in the top four as
they
well.
They were top three, weren't they, at one point?
Yeah, so I think that's the fact that they weren't getting the 3 points that they needed to stay there. That was kind of their mini crisis.
Yeah, but I think that's all at face value, though. If you look deeper, two of those draws, one of them was away at Dortmund, which is a really impressive point.
And that's true.
And the other one, they came from 3-1 down against Hoffenheim, which is also a really good point.
Yeah, to stay on Hertha, you also have to keep in mind that we've mentioned many times before that their squad isn't very deep.
A lot of injuries too.
A lot of injuries. Exactly. That's exactly what I wanted to say. I mean, Davy Selke had injury trouble at the beginning of the season, and he seems to be closer to the goal scoring form that he ended the season last year with. I'm not just saying this because he was my fantasy team, but Jordan Tarunariga is arguably their best defender.
Certainly been a stand-up this season, and I think made all the more important by the fact that Nicholas Stark is still out. Rekic is also still out. So, yeah, Turungaria, am I pronouncing that wrong? you do it, Davis.
Yeah, I think it's Turungaria or something like that.
Me getting tongue-twisted. The fact that he's come in has been really, really good timing for Hertha. I think we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. Defensively solid, we all know that's been the foundation of their success over the past couple of seasons under Pal Dardai. And we discussed a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, how I think we suspected that Hertha were trying to move away from that a little bit, almost trying to move a bit forward in their development as a team and play slightly more expansive and expressive football. And then I think we wondered whether Dardai had even noticed that, okay, maybe this is coming a little bit too soon. Maybe the be-all and end-all isn't playing fancy, nice, attractive football, but getting points on the board.
Right.
And I think they've returned to that in recent weeks.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of their chances at the end of the game, I mean, you had the two Selke breaks at the end that one of them where he was offside and the other where he probably should have done better and scored a goal around not Kevin Trapp, although Kevin Trapp did a great job coming
really
off his
save,
line.
Yeah.
That's the kind of team we've expected.
Was that the first time though this season that Hertha were able to field such an offensive lineup?
That's true. Started, I mean, because you also have to keep
it like his first. It wasn't his first start, was it? But he's not long back from injury.
So Dardai used the same team as in their previous game. Yeah. He just used a different formation. He used 4-4-2. Instead of, I think it was either a diamond 4-4-2 or I think something else. Mm-hmm. And then you had Vedad Abisevic playing in a much more creative center forward
more
role.
More pivot in there,
right,
behind Selke holding it up.
Exactly.
And Kalou and Lecky either side of him, didn't he?
Exactly, yeah. So it's, but yeah, you're certainly right. And we also have to mention Marko Grujic, who it was an interesting time to get his for Dardai to include him now into the team. Obviously scored the goal, but also played a really important stability role next to Arne Meyer in front of the back four. And it certainly his presence there, although one could argue that he conceded a penalty at the end, I mean, his presence there was able to just break up that front three, that very dangerous front three from Eintracht Frankfurt.
I think he was. I think you're right in pointing him out. You're not the only commentator or analyst to have highlighted Grujic's role, and not just from a goal-scoring point of view, but a lot of the words that have been popping up in the German press this weekend regarding Hertha have been, you know, tactical discipline. Hard work, good organisation, high levels of concentration. These absolutely key facets that have made Hertha so good at the start of the season, which I think maybe they tried to get away from before they were ready. They tried to move on from that whilst David Selke was still injured. And I think if they are going to eventually move on and develop as a team and start being more expansive, then Selke will be key for that. But for the time being, he's still finding his way back in from injury. We saw that in the two chances that he missed. Well, one of them was a goal ruled out correctly for offside, and the other one was a good save from Chap. But the important thing is that he's getting himself in those positions, and that's so important to her to have a player like Selke up there on the shoulder of the last man, because it's something that Kalou could offer a couple of years ago, but he's no longer the youngest. And obviously, pace isn't something that Vedad Ibisevic offers. He offers other things. So having Selke up there for Hertha's, really, really positive signs. And I think, that clinicalness in front of goal will come for him.
To move on to Frankfurt, I even though that they didn't score in this game, I actually thought that they played better this week than they did against Wolfsburg last week. Just in the fact that the chances that, Hertha's defense is just difficult to break down in general, but but you could see the chances that Haller was creating Rebic was creating and Jovic was creating it seemed like they clicked a lot better than they did against Wolfsburg. I think against Wolfsburg, it was just, they had played so many games in a row. I think that they just looked tired, but they looked a little bit more fresh in this game. It does seem like they might still be in line to regress a little bit to the mean, in a way. But maybe I'm kind of caught between this performance being positive, but at the same time it's kind of not unexpected that now Frankfurt have lost two games in a row, especially considering that they've also played six additional Europa League games.
They played 21 games in total so far, I think, this season now. And the sporting director Freddie Bobic was asked after the game that are we now seeing the effect of that Frankfurt squad having to fight on two fronts? Saturday, Thursday, or Sunday, Thursday, or whenever they're playing. He dismissed that. He said, no, it's not. It's definitely not a physical issue. Perhaps maybe a slight mental issue creeping in terms of mental tiredness, but he's not particularly concerned. As you said, these weren't bad performances. Frankfurt weren't particularly bad against Hertha. They weren't particularly bad against Wolfsburg either. Obviously, that was coming off even more impressive Europa League performances. I think what maybe hamstrung them a little bit against Hertha on Saturday, it did take them 20-25 minutes to really get going, didn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
I think they played slightly more defensively. Obviously, starting De Guzman and who was it that started in midfield alongside him? Gelson Fernandez.
Yeah, it's Gelson Fernandez. So, yeah, I was going to say.
I mean, the way Adi Hütte has been playing, that was a relatively more defensive lineup, wasn't it, Bath? And I think they were right to show Hertha that respect. We talked about the attacking potential that Hertha offered on Saturday. So I don't blame Adi Hütte for lining Frankfurt up a little bit more defensively, as he has in comparison to other games this season. But it did take Frankfurt maybe 20-25 minutes to really get used to that, I think, and grow into the game.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the last two games in particular, it's also, I mean, you look at the job, Adi Hütte, I mean, should be praised for the job, definitely should be praised for the job he's doing. But you can see in the recent games, he's kind of struggled with what he kind of wants, what do in which competition. Of course, it was clear when Frankfurt had a real chance to advance out of their Europa League group he saved at times Ante Rebic for the Europa League, although it didn't really hinder them in the Bundesliga. But now you wonder if Frankfurt have a real realistic chance of qualifying for the top four, and you have to wonder where should their priorities lie? Because as nice as a Europa League one would be, and as nice as the fans and as wonderful as the fans would be for those Thursday night games, I mean, the fact remains that the premier competition in Europe is the Champions League.
Yeah, they've got a bit of a luxury now, haven't they? Obviously, they go to Rome on Thursday.
It's crazy to think. Well, I mean, just talking about this, it's crazy to consider that this is what Frankfurt has to deal with now, considering a few years ago they were dealing with relegation.
True, yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously, yeah, in a relegation playoff against Nuremberg, weren't they, just a few years ago? And now here we are talking about the match day six in the Europa League. They're going away to Lazio with all the weight off their shoulders. You know, they could make 6-7 changes. And I think they will. I think Bobic is right to point out that I don't think it's a physical tiredness coming in. I think he's right to point out there's maybe a little bit of mental tiredness coming in, because it must be mentally draining. Just literally two games a week, on off, and that might be okay for players who are used to playing for the likes of Real Madrid or Man United or whatever, year in, year out in the Champions League. But Frankfurt, this is new to a lot of those players, so I think that's absolutely fair. After the Lazio game, they've got Leverkusen at home, which they would, in Leverkusen's current problems, you
a
would tough, expect
a relatively strong stretch, too.
Mainz away, that's a local derby for Frankfurt, but again, Mainz.
But Mainz is a tough team.
Very tough and tactically well aware in recent weeks, quite well organised under Sandro Schwarz. And then Bayern at home.
Yeah, the German Cup rematch.
That's a cracker to finish off the first part of the season. So, yeah, I don't think it's the most difficult or the most absolutely challenging, Bayern aside, finish to the year for Frankfurt, and I think they'll get back on track. It's important to point out that, like I said, those performances against Wolfsburg and Hertha, they weren't bad. I still think Frankfurt are very much still very much on the right track, and I think they're lucky now. Well, not lucky, they've earned themselves a rather more luxurious trip to Rome on Thursday.
All right, so let's get to our final topic. We have a little bit more of a compressed part. Bayern Munich ended their... Do you know when Bayern Munich's last home win was in the Bundesliga?
The last home win?
I'm asking you off the top of your head.
No, top of my head, no.
Yeah, their last home win in the Bundesliga was September 15th.
That was
against Bayer Leverkusen.
Is that how far back?
That's how far back it has. That's how long it's been since Bayern Munich has won a game at home, because they drew with Augsburg. They drew with Freiburg. They drew with a bunch of teams. Obviously, drew with Dusseldorf. But it's crazy to think that this was their first home win in the Bundesliga since September. Now, of course, it comes against a team that's battling against the relegation zone, but it's still significant in the fact that Bayern Munich, ahead of a very important game for the European camp, or a rather important game, I should say, maybe not very important, but a rather important game in their European campaign, got the 3 points at home.
There's been a clear change in Munich, hasn't there? We talked about it a couple of weeks ago that. Kovac's authority being questioned slightly. There were internal meetings at Bayern involving senior players, involving Salihamidzic, the sporting director, involving the top brass in Munich, and then also involving Kovac as well. Certain decisions were made. I believe that certain decisions regarding internal communication between various parts of the hierarchy were made. I don't think anyone's entirely sure exactly what that entails, but I think it was an important step to make. So there's been a certain clearing of the air that's taken place. And I think we've seen part of that now in the fact that for the first time in, I think, three years even, for two Bundesliga games in a row, so going back to the win in Bremen and then the win against Nuremberg at the weekend, Bayern Munich played an identical starting 11. So in terms of Kovac's authority and Kovac's standing within his own dressing room there, that's quite a statement of intent, isn't it? He's now putting his foot down, saying no, that was that's my lineup and I'm sticking with it. And that's a bit of a departure from, I think, earlier on in the season when it was going a lot better. He was rotating a lot. He was keeping everyone in quite a demanding squad, keeping them all happy, giving them all game time. But that then obviously, that obviously had drawbacks when it came to digging Bayern out of the rut they were in. They're slowly climbing out of that. I'm not saying that these clear the air talks and this new harder line from Kovac, that's now going to solve all Bayern's problems and they're now going to march on and challenge Dortmund for the title. We're nowhere near that far yet. It was a a relatively hard-fought win away in Bremen last week, and yeah, an unspectacular win against a team, a Nuremberg team, which are well below even Bayern Munich. But yeah, there's definitely been a clear change in Bayern in Munich. That's the point.
Yeah, I think the continuity point I think is interesting because I remember a stat under the Pep Guardiola era that a lot of people like to quote was how many different lineups that Pep Guardiola would like to make. But if you actually looked at the lineups from game to game, there weren't necessarily wholesale changes. He still had guys that he depended on week in and week out. Now, of course, Jupp Heynckes, the master of rotation, was even as the master of rotation, if you look at the treble year, the year that Bayern Munich lifted three trophies, when they wrapped up the Bundesliga, Jupp Heynckes basically used the same lineup.
Jupp Heynckes was never battling against any questions to his authority.
That's
any
true.
Question to his standing or to his pedigree.
But my point in general is that I mean, continuity can be a very powerful tool, especially in two games. I mean, Bayern Munich didn't have any midweek games this week. That's obviously not a normal thing for them. But sticking with the same lineup for these two games, trying to get their Bundesliga campaign back on track, almost irregardless of their Champions League fixture on Wednesday or Tuesday, I thought that was a very important lack of change that Niko Kovac needed to make.
It is, but I also think the precise changes, like I said, it's the precise lack of changes that he's made. So the precise players and areas that he's stuck with are also, and touch wood here, they're relatively progressive, and I think it is a little mini step in the right direction.
Yeah, Joshua Kimmich in midfield, definitely. I mean, you have also
More importantly, partnered by Goretzka for 2 weeks on the bounce now. Mm-hmm. I think that's even more. We know that Joshua Kimmich is a key part of this transition. If anything, he's the ideal bridge in the squad, isn't he? Between old and new. Obviously, a part of the old Bayern team, but young enough, obviously, to be also play a leading role in what this new Bayern team is going to look like. Mm-hmm. But more importantly for me is the fact that Leon Goretzka has now started two games alongside him, and that in place of Javi Martinez. Javi Martinez, as great a player as he is, also clearly a part of that old Bayern team.
Yeah, and he definitely didn't put in the performances that would warrant a space in the team. And I think to his credit, he's also acknowledged that in some ways. You're right that putting Goretzka in the starting 11 was definitely a fresh face, especially considering the fact Leon Goretzka almost scored a couple of times.
Yeah, fantastic.
And Lewandowski put in one of his fantastic effort
off the bar. If people haven't seen the highlights, so that's Leon Goretzka's pulled the ball out of his feet really well, and it's a great curling effort onto the bar. And just a little quick aside, obviously Lewandowski's put the rebound in on his first touch. I don't think he's meant that. I think that's poor control. Look at it closely.
Oh,
I think Lewandowski's aiming to take a touch there because he does have the time and space. I think he's aiming to take a touch and then put it in. I think the ball has got away from him, but fortunately has then sneaked into the goal. But yeah, that just as a little aside. We talked about that lack of rotation and continuity in midfield involving Kimmich and Goretzka. The same can be said just behind them too. Obviously Mats Hummels has remained on the bench. We know there's been talk about perhaps personal differences between Hummels and Kovac, but I think it's another progressive sign that he's sticking with Niklas Süle in there alongside Jerome Boateng. In the same way that Goretzka's a positive sign going forward, Süle's also, for me, has to be the face of Bayern Munich's centre-back partnership going forward. So that was also impressive. One area which he hasn't changed, obviously he stuck with Thomas Müller in behind Lewandowski, which given Müller's current return to form, you can't really argue with.
No, definitely not.
He has been good. He has been returned to form.
I think that's actually, so that was one point that I did want to make, is that having Thomas Müller back in the team and back on form and playing really well with Serge Gnabry next to him, I think that's one thing that Bayern Munich needed.
Definitely, but playing well, linking it well with Serge Gnabry is one thing, and I totally agree with you. And I think the continued presence of Gnabry in there is also another positive point for Bayern going forward. However, Müller is in that team now at the expense of arguably Renato Sanchez. I don't know. I'll put the question to you. Do you think that
at the expense of Renato Sanchez?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean Renato Sanchez, I think, would be someone to replace Leon Goretzka. I don't think he'd be someone to replace Thomas Müller.
Okay.
I think if anything, I think there was a time when, I mean, I think it's more that James Rodriguez isn't getting the time. That's the one change obviously James Rodriguez has taken issue with, is that the fact that he's not playing, and he's not playing under Niko Kovac. But at the same time, you look at the types of players that are in the Serge Gnabry, I think, complements Thomas Müller much better than he complements James Rodriguez. And I think the fact that it's worked so well 2 weeks in a row, I think it's abundantly clear. Now, what will be interesting is what happens over the winter break and what happens next. Because keep in mind, there's not very many games left in before the winter break. So, I mean, Bayern Munich could stick with a similar lineup until then and then address the new year when it comes. But yeah, I think that I definitely think that what Niko Kovac has found right now, and he appears to be sticking with, seems to be working.
How do you see that dynamic developing then in behind Robert Lewandowski? Obviously, like we said, at the moment, given Thomas Müller's return to form, we can't really take him out. Bayern can't really take him out of the lineup. However, arguably going forward, James Rodriguez would be a younger face, a more progressive face, but has he even got a future? So where do you see it? Obviously, Thomas Müller, like I said, his form is indisputable at the moment, but he is obviously part of that old guard.
I think that James Rodriguez is going to be the type of player that Bayern will need on the European stage.
Will he still be there in January?
Oh, I mean, he still has the loan agreement. I don't know the exact situation. I don't think anybody does. But if anything, it's whether James Rodriguez is going to remain with the team next year, and that's going to depend whether Niko Kovac is there. But in terms of the rest of this season, I think it'll be interesting to see. Of course, Thiago is also still fit again. It'll be interesting whose spot he takes and whether Joshua Kimmich goes back to the defense. But Niko Kovac needs to just figure out the right mixture. He has the winter break to figure out the right mixture for the Bundesliga and for Europe.
I mean, key to that is moving away from the rotation slightly as much as he can, obviously within limits, because Bayern are still fighting on three fronts going into the new year, still in the cup. They've got Hertha Berlin away in the cup, I think.
Right, yeah.
Whether they finish top or second of their Champions League group will be decided in the week in Amsterdam, and obviously they need to catch up with Dortmund. So yeah, that's going to be the key for me now for Kovac going forward. One, can he continue to establish this authority in the dressing room via a lack of rotation and sticking to his guns and sticking to what works week in, week out, whilst balancing that with the rotation that is going to be necessary in the new year.
All right, that'll do it for the podcast this week. Thank you all for sticking with us to the end. I know it was a very hectic podcast. We didn't have as much time to plan as we normally do. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you get your podcasts from. And if you do, give us a good review, because it'll help us grow our show. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is at Matt_4D, and I'm at Davis_Fenopter. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.